Min campus al ihor. Miaj Karsten Schwine. Akoma il-programm ieħor fis-sensiela minn campus għalihor miegħi Karsten Schwiele fil-lum it-tmiem programm fit-tielet sensiela naslu l-itmiem dawn it-tlet sensieliet imma nbuq għandna ħafna x'ngħidu ħafna nies interessanti ma' minn niltaqgħu. F'dawn l-aħħar programmi kellna xort ukoll nitkellmu ma' ftit kollegi Maltin, nisimaw l-istorja tagħhom, kemm min jgħix barra kif ukoll minn forsi tjerġa' jissetilja lura Malta. Illum nitkellem mal-professura tal-istudji globali Michel Pace. Michel Pace qed tkellimna minn ġewwa l-Università ta' Roskilde, ta' Tramuntana ta' l-Ewropa, Danimarka. U ħataqsam maħna ħafna esperienzi f-program jirna xilna nitkellmu fuq numru ta' affarijiet personali, aneddoti, riflessjonijiet dwar Malta u ħafna ħafna wkoll politika internazzjonali li kif nafu id-dejjem iġibu għal kwistjonijiet ta' diffikultajiet fuq livell internazzjonali ta' konflitt, ta' tensjonijiet u anki ir-rwol ta' ħafna proġetti anki akademiċi impenjati biex jippruvaw jindirizzaw dawn id-diffikultajiet. Michel Pace, kif għattilkom, għattkellimna minn Roskilde, l-Università f'Danimarka, hija Associate Fellow ta' Chatham House, il-programm Ewropew ġewwa Londra u membru assoċjata tal-Middle East Studies Forum ta' Deakin University l-Australia. Hija wkoll il-ko-editriċi u membru tal-Board Editoriali ta' Mediterranean Politics. U anki għamlet ħafna xogħol mitwaqqif propju tal-working group dwar studji internazzjonali tal-Mediterran u anki favur il-promozzjoni ta' affarijiet marbutin mal-Unjoni Ewropea u d-demokrazija, partikolarment kif ħan nisimgħu fejn inħarsu lejn Vat Nofsani u relazzjonijiet partikolarment li jitħarsu anki lej dak li sejjaħ il-MENA region, Middle East and North Africa. Specialment stejjer narrazzjonijiet narrativi li jiġu anki mill-Eġittu u mill-Palestina. Kif għattilkom hemm l-impenn prattiku, l-engagement, kif jgħidulu l-Franċiżi, fil-fatt tmexxi proġett ta' proġetti Ewropej Horizon 2020 li jismu Sirius. U jħor partu mill-network ta' Jamone illi jismu Jumania u li fil-fat għal-proġetti oħra li ta' għamil propju jingaġġaw ruħom biex studji, riċerka, diskussjonijiet, networks, fora, dak li jseħħu kol capacity building u wassal għal reazzjonijiet u inizjattivi u proġetti diretti f'daw l-oqsma differenti, partikolarment kif għedinna Michel ukoll fil-Lebanon u anki rigward il-refugjati sirjani. Mela, ejja nisimgħu minn għandha direttament dawn l-istejjer kollha, dawn ir-rakkonti kollha marbutin anki mal-kuntest Malti li huwa interessanti ħafna. Michel Pace. Welcome back to the listeners of Min Campus Al Ihor after that introduction to my guest today, Michel Pace. Michel is with me already, so welcome, Michel, and thank you for joining me for the show.
You're welcome, and thanks to you for inviting me.
Michel, in fact, just before starting, we were joking a little bit about use of language, trying to tell ourselves and to remind ourselves that of switching from the casual conversation on the margins of this recording, we'll try not to switch into Maltese and forget that we have an international audience following us both on Campus FM as well as on the podcast, which is available on the website of Campus FM. And we're saying this because we're both Maltese. We've known each other for a few years now. I have fond memories of visiting you in Roskilde, even staying at your beautiful place in Denmark together with your husband Egil, who used to teach me years ago at the University of Warwick, and also your children. So we'll try to stick obviously to the English language and between the language and also the musical pieces that you have chosen for us. We'll try to sort of go through your career path, your career development, with anecdotes, with personal stories, but also, as we were saying, even in preparing for this program, keeping in mind our audience, that is quite varied, from students, people related to the campus of the University of Malta, but even other universities who know you, follow you, and maybe we'll also get another glimpse of your life story in relation to your profession. This is not the first time that you've done something similar. In fact, to prepare for this program, you also sent me some other recorded material, also as part of another series in collaboration with other colleagues you had, so focusing on feminist themes, and there were interesting debates which you had in that context as well. In our case, we'll look at a number of elements that you work with in terms of policies, politics, and also international dimensions. But to start off from, I think my first question will be, as with most other guests on the show, where did it all start from? So it's not an easy question, but if you had to sort of go back, retrace your steps, where did all your energy, passion, interest, curiosity as well, on a very personal level, start from? Was it a mix of education, travel, family?
It's a very good question, actually, because it boils down for me to identity. And I think I have to say that coming from a small island state might seem to many others as a disadvantage, but actually for me it was a huge advantage, and I'm really blessed to be actually born and bred in Malta. I think it also connects to your opening statement about our language, because it's such a rich language, right? Yeah. And it has so many diverse connections to the Arab world, to Italian, to Latin, etc. So I think, being born and bred in Malta gave me such a sort of huge repertoire of sources to draw upon. And I grew up in a very sort of humble home, in a very working class home. But I had, I have to say, I had very strong characters in my family. So my granddad was a huge socialist, and, sitting on his lap on Sundays when we used to go and visit my grandma and my grandfather, he taught me, some of the core principles that I still value up to this day, issues of justice and equality. So I strongly and very emotionally remember the days when he used to narrate to me, the biggest injustice in this world about what happened to Palestinians when they lost their homeland. Mm-hmm. And I kind of grew up not only with a sense of why, asking why, and why would these things happen in a world where, humans are a global community. So that kind of curiosity I can still trace back in most of my work, actually.
And as you said, not only a matter of why, but also from what I know about your not only academic profile and career, but also your very practical, tangible, engaged work. And you will tell us more about this later. It's also, what can I do about it?
That's right. Yes. So the sense of not just looking at the world out there, but seeing ourselves as active citizens in the world to actually try and do something about changing what seems to me a huge inequality and unfair society. And then another strong character in my life was actually my father, because he used to work with the British Navy. And I could see every time he had to take a trip, sometimes 9 months, sometimes 6 months. Mm-hmm. But due to the economic situation in the Maltese Islands at that time, most families had to rely on working with the British, who used to colonize, of course, our islands. Mm-hmm. And it was that kind of pain of seeing him go away and yet come back full of, stories to tell us about the trips he made to India and the UK, etc. And that kind of raised, again, an international curiosity, which went far beyond the horizons of the Maltese Islands to me. And then, of course, my mother was also a very strong character in my life, because one of the things she gave me was this sense of curiosity through reading. She helped me, you know, develop a passion for reading and learning through reading. And that kind of stayed with me up to this day. And I hope that it will stay on, and I will pass on to my children as well. And I also remember I had an uncle who had emigrated to Australia, Uncle Tony. And Uncle Eddie, actually, two uncles who had emigrated to Australia. And they both, you know, used to, every time they visited Malta from Australia, which of course was a long trip even more at that time. They used to again come back with, you know, books to give me to read, and which were not necessarily easily, you know, accessible in Malta. And so sort of I was always surrounded by family members who broadened my horizons and never, you know, sort of passed on this notion that you're stuck on this small island, you know. So, you know, I'm very grateful, because that was, for me, you know, my education basically started at home. That was my primary stint into the, you know, universal educational world. So, yeah, to that I remain immensely grateful.
In a way, a really living personal proof that how important family, home is. And not necessarily because you're privileged or because you have everything at the drop of a hat, but it's because you have a particular social dynamic in touch with what is happening around oneself. So in spite of the hardship, or maybe even because of the hardship.
Well,
so
yes, I think
that's really
precisely
all dimensions.
I think because we lagged access to a lot of things. I remember very, very vividly, you know, I've got quite long fingers, and I used to really, when I was young, I dreamt of playing the piano, for example. But my family couldn't afford to buy me a piano. So then I kind of made up for that by listening to classical music a lot. Because I had access to some, in those days we used to have tape recordings, you know. and every time my elder sister who lived in the UK, or my uncles or aunties who lived in Canada or Australia used to come, and they asked what would I wish for, I would always say, please bring me some music. So sort of that kind of deprivation was a strength in many ways. I turned it into a strength, because what I yearned for, I tried to replace with something, you know, that could give me, provide me, not necessarily with the access I desired or wished for, but at least as a sound platform to go into that world that I dreamt of, you know.
Having to be as the others, so those necessities, the mother of invention. So the story you are placing us in is very evocative, because I think not only the Maltese listeners of whatever age, really, but even around the world, kind of locate that period of pre-post-independence in many budding nations, part of maybe the British or the French Empire or whatever, and a coming together of many situations where the local, although today or in the last few decades we speak more and more about local and global in terms of globalization, there's already many global elements there, because even the element of the tape cassette or a tape recording or music or even voices traveling between different territories, that was very much part of even the technological development of the last 50 years or so.
Precisely. And I also have to mention that a huge, very controversial character who influenced my pathway as well was actually our Prime Minister Domintov. Because I do recall, you know, his mass meetings where he always ended with Ashmalta Lowell Abel Kollosh, you know, the famous closing statement, because Malta has to be first and foremost. And I was struck by that, because, you know, he was married to a British woman, Moira, and he had two children. And I think he was also, now that I'm reading his autobiography by one of his friends, Mark, he was also kind of in between, you know. He always felt in this liminal position of being in between the Maltese Islands and the UK, but also, you know, this kind of uneasy relationship with our colonial power. And yet he was married to a Brit, right? So sort of that kind of enigmatic, you know, dimension of Domintov, but yet his quest for equality for all on the Maltese Islands, his quest for decolonization. I mean, these are all things that appear now in my work. So that's why, you know, I think I kind of grew up always looking beyond, but I was deeply embedded in the Maltese society and politics and milieu. So, and I remain so up to this day, you know, I'm kind of away from Malta, but very much thinking of Malta. So it's kind of this in and out dimension.
Yes. In fact, Michelle, I'm sure I'm not the only one telling you that when I'm lucky enough to catch an address of yours recently, maybe more online, even because of the effect of the pandemic, but even at the University of Malta previously, I'd always sort of be not surprised, because it's not a matter of being surprised, but sort of really happy to see how much in touch you remain with what's happening, which in a way recalls even some other Maltese guests on this show, who live abroad, have been living abroad for a number of years, but the thirst for knowing what's happening, sort of keeping the pulse of what's happening locally, is sort of not exclusive to the international scene, but very much part and parcel of the bigger picture.
And the interesting thing is that I still keep in touch both with, you know, colleagues and friends in Malta, but also Maltese expats. So, you know, I am very fond of John Baldacchino, you know, and I've been following his work as well. And we were lucky to be living in the UK at the same time. And we used to have a lot of deep conversations about, you know, this feeling of being in and out, and yet would like to continue to contribute somehow to the development of, you know, intellectual milieus in the Maltese Islands, and also being somehow still connected. So I think that there's a very strong bond, at least, you know, between a number of Maltese abroad who share this feeling, this deep embeddedness,
that's right.
Although being outside.
Yes, Michelle, we'll come to that also, because of even in the spirit and the nature of this program called Min Campus Ali, or in a way sort of campus hopping, campus connecting, we'll come also to the academic part of your development in the second part of this program. With my guest today, Michelle Pache, speaking to me from Denmark, from Roskilde. However, let's pause for the first of three tracks. You also, like many other guests, tell me the most difficult part of preparing for this program is selecting a restricted number of musical tracks. And in your case, you did all that music played a very important part in your formation, personal and even intellectual. So let's listen to the first one. But can you help me introduce it? What are we going to listen to?
So shall we hear the classic guitar by Joaquin Rodrigo?
Yes.
It's a Spanish piece. It's the Adagio from his Concierto de Aranjuezo. It's a very strong piece. It's a long piece, but I'll never tire of listening to it. It's 12 minutes and 38 seconds. And for me, it represents a rite of passage, you know, so leaving the Maltese Islands in 1994 to carry out my studies at Warwick University was the first rite of passage for me. And then moving on to the UK to do my PhD in 1997 was again, you know, a rite of passage. And then while I was carrying out my PhD studies, I had the opportunity to go and live in Norway, where my partner is from. And then again, moving back to the UK. So this kind of, you know, rite of passage continues. And yet, because it's a very Mediterranean piece, it's a very powerful, emotional, strong piece, it kind of reflects this going back and forth, you know, so going for an experience, getting an experience, bringing more back, and just feeling that you have so much to share and give and to learn still. So it's kind of opening all the time in so many ways. That's why I love it.
Perfect. Let's listen to it. So we're back after listening to a very short part of Rodrigo's Concierto de Aranjes. I must admit, I really love that tune, and also like the take that Miles Davis years later had done in his Sketches of Spain. And as you said, very cyclical. Michel Pache on my program today was telling me about this of coming and going, almost like an ebbing of a tide. And again, within the Mediterranean context, I think it's one of the best metaphors we could come up with. Michel, to proceed with the second part of our program today, Min Campus Alihor, can you tell us a little bit, because you really gave us a glimpse of moving on from Malta to the UK, onwards to Norway. Briefly, sort of how did that happen, even keeping in mind our audience? Was it all planned? Was it a matter of chance? Was it a matter of sort of following a little bit opportunities which you were sowing the seeds for?
Actually, no. When I was studying at the University of Malta, I was the first in my family to actually go to university. Mm-hmm. So I felt extremely privileged to have the opportunity. And to be honest with you, my first choice would have been social work and psychology. That's mm-hmm. really what I wanted to study. But because of the sort of system we had in the Maltese Islands at that time, I missed 2 points. We had a point system. So I had the choice between repeating, you know, a couple of things to gain those points mm-hmm. and then missing out on being with my friends from sixth form at university or trying something else. Mm-hmm. And I think the social aspect, you know, was prioritized at that time mm-hmm. and at that mm-hmm. point in my life. And I took BCom, Bachelor of Commerce, which I had never dreamt of taking, actually. But it was coincidental. Mm-hmm. And I still today, you know, I'm still studying psychology and social work because it's still what I really love, actually. Mm-hmm. So I ended up at BCom, and I had a beautiful class. We had 100 mm-hmm. students, and we had such a nice community. And I think a traumatic event actually brought us even closer together. We lost Buddy, who was in our class, to a tragic car accident. And I think we kind of shared in the pain, and yet it made us stronger. Mm-hmm. And some of us are still meeting up to this day. So going through, you know, accounts, economics, business administration, public mm-hmm. administration, marketing management, this was all kind of things that I hadn't planned to do, but actually nowadays I think actually that was really helpful because it mm-hmm. helped me to organize myself, you know, helped me to know that planning is really critical in what I do.
If I may, Michel, even in your, we'll come to this hopefully before the end of our conversation, when you sort of adopt a critical, analytical perspective to the international and Mediterranean matters you deal with, so if you have that toolbox, which tells you that you've got to sometimes follow the money. You've got to sometimes follow the critical aspects of how a society is formed.
And also, you know, to keep in mind that your work can have very different audiences. So some can be very well versed in what you're saying and doing, but others might not have a clue. So writing, mm-hmm. you know, when one is writing, you need to write in a very clear, coherent way so that if you want to broaden your audience, then you can help your readers understand you better in what you're trying to actually put forward. So that was quite, you know, quite pivotal in the formation of my early years at university. And then after 3 years doing the BCom, I went to the fourth year where I had to focus more on one topic, and that was marketing management. So again, it wasn't something that I had planned, but after 4 years doing business, I had the opportunity to work in an offshore bank in Malta. Mm-hmm. And that gave me a huge insight into the business world. And after a couple of years, I realized actually this is not really me. And mm-hmm. to be true to myself, I couldn't, although I had a very nice lifestyle, you know, I was traveling a lot. I had a good salary. But deep down, I wasn't happy, you know. So I decided to throw in the towel and start on the track that I really wanted. And that meant, you know, taking a master's degree in something completely different. Mm-hmm. And when I was looking through the brochures, you know, going to the UK to study for a master's was a very clear, you know, option, but there was a caveat, and that was it was extremely expensive. So my father couldn't afford to support me, so I had to find ways to basically pay myself. And apart from having some savings from the work I had done for the bank, but also I was applying for scholarships. And I was lucky at that time we used to have a scholarship from the APS Bank. And I was lucky to, it was kind of a scholarship, but it's actually an extended loan. So the APS Bank was offering loans to students who wanted to study abroad at a very, you know, manageable interest rate. And that is what secured my 1 year at Warwick University, which again was very informative because I started international politics. And it was tough. It was a really tough year because I was with students coming from all over the world who actually had as a first degree studied international politics or anthropology or sociology, whereas I didn't have that background. So I had to work probably double, triple time as hard, you know, staying late in the library and really picking up on some of the core texts we had to read. And there I discovered Foucault, Michel Foucault, who has been, you know, a historian of ideas that I respected a lot what he had written, but I was also kind of keeping a critical stance to his work. But one of the things his work gave me was this constant questioning of power. Where does power come from? You know, who holds power and whose agenda is being followed? So I kind of kept it very close to my heart. And yeah, I mean, it was a mixed bag of, you know, working really hard to sustain my studies and to really do well, because I really wanted to go on this track. This was what I really wanted to do. And then at the same time, trying to financially sustain myself. So it was always, you know, a balancing act. But I was lucky again because I ended up in a very good university and I had some amazing educators who opened up my horizons. Barbara Robertson was probably a key to my door to the Euromed in terms of, you know, studying Euromed relations, which, you know, going back to our initial conversation showed me that this was truly what I really wanted to do, because this was how I identified. I identified both as a European, but very much so as a Mediterranean, Middle Eastern, North African, you know, citizen. So, so that kind of notion of globality, of being a global citizen, started to form when I did my master's. And then because I had borrowed this loan from APS Bank, I was obliged to go to return back to the bank where I had a job. And I had to work in order to pay for my loan. But at the same time, I was lucky because I was given the opportunity to teach part-time at the University of Malta. And there I taught international relations and Euromed relations. And that kind of gave me an opening to what it's like to be in a university environment, you know, the politics, the bureaucracy, but also the sense of enlightenment, right? When when you go on campus and there's this, you know, energy of students talking in the cafe and deliberating about theories and philosophies, etc. And I kind of liked it. I fell in love with it. And I thought,
you took to it and somehow within a short span of time, which obviously we're condensing in this interview today on In Campus Alihor with my guest, Michel Pace. You're giving us a sense of really managing to, in a very applied way, this balancing act between having to pay back one's debts, having to study while learning and expanding one's horizons, travel, which is no mean thing, even in today's world with so many Erasmus and other opportunities, it's still a challenge in and of itself. But also then coming back to work within an environment not directly related to what you had been doing, but then teaching, lecturing, and seeing also the other side of the coin, sort of, when it comes to the, as you said, the administration, the bureaucracy, the management of actually delivering all you're doing in a very condensed space of time.
That's right. So while I was, you know, carrying out this teaching working at the same time, I started to think, well, I need to do a PhD. I need to continue this pathway, because I was always, as I mentioned from my childhood, I was always open to knowledge and you know, the more I learned, the more I realized I have to learn. There's, you know, it's a world out there that is open like this, the Mediterranean Sea. So this quest for knowledge and learning was what drove me to sit at the Library of the University of Malta and read much more and try to develop some ideas that I had developed in my master's time at Warwick University. And this is where I came up with the idea of how can I combine my own personal experience and, you know, connecting it to the theories and philosophical discussions that I've been exposed to during my master's. And that led me to my PhD application. But again, there was this caveat always hanging at the back of me. And how was it? Malta was not then part of the EU, so we had to pay full fees, right, when we studied at the at UK universities. Mm-hmm. How was I going to support myself for 3 years full-time, you know, working and learning in a good establishment in the UK? So I got accepted at the London School of Economics with Christopher Hill, one of, you know, the best academics in European foreign policy analysis. And I shared with him my proposal and he accepted it. But he gave me a call and he said, Michelle, I'd love to have you on board, but you realize that this is going to cost you so much, both in terms of fees, but living in London, because, you know, the LSE is based in London. And he said, I have a Turkish student and she's really struggling and she's actually going through a very tough period and I don't want you to end up like her. So he was a very nice human, I think. And I was, again, lucky to have somebody be honest with me and put my feet on the ground and not just let me, you know, on my dream cloud, so to say. And then, you know, as circumstances had it, Dominic Fenech, actually, from the University of Malta, gave me a call and said, Michelle, because I had told him about my proposal. Mm-hmm. It was about, you know, Mediterranean regional identity and how the European Union constantly, you know, deals with the Mediterranean as a holistic region. And yet there's so much diversity within, right? That's kind of very basically the idea behind it. And again, this was, I think, a matter of pure luck and destiny, perhaps. But Dominic called me one day and said, Michelle, there's a scholarship at Portsmouth University that's just for you. It's your proposal. Mm-hmm. And Richard Gillespie, who's running this Euro-Mediterranean division within the politics department at Portsmouth, is opening up for scholarships from abroad. So he said, give him a call. And I remember at that time we didn't have mobile. So I was living in Baharicha and I went out to the telephone box just by the kiosk there near the bus stop. And I was so nervous. You know, I remember it was about 40 degrees outside. It was the heat of summer. And I called Richard and I said, you know, I've been referred to you by Dominic. I've got this proposal. Would you look at it? It might be of interest. Please let me know. And he said, yeah, you know, send it over. And he called me back after he had read it and he said, it's a very good proposal, but it's a very tough competitive scholarship because it would pay your fees, it would pay your expenses for field work, it would cover you basically, and you don't have to work, you can focus on your studies. Anyway, to cut a long story short, I made it in the shortlisting and then I got this scholarship and I was just crying, you know. I remember the day when I received the news. And it led me to a very nice milieu, again, at Portsmouth, which then opened me up to various disciplines. So there were, you know, teachers and students doing geography, sociology, anthropology, philosophy, history of ideas. And that was, to me, you know, what I had dreamt of. This was like my dream come true.
The environment, you described it there as a milieu, was sort of exposing you and putting you right and bang in the middle of all that influence.
And I was lucky to have people who supported me all the way. And, you know, even though I had, as I mentioned, this very humble background, you know, so I was just honest and said, I'm here to learn. Please just whatever I can learn from, just send it my way. And I just
bring it on.
I jumped on those trains, you know. Mm-hmm. I jumped on them and I was curious. I worked extremely hard, but it wasn't easy, you know, being away from your loved ones and being away from home.
Michel, there is a number of aspects which we're really touching upon, but I think this strong base, which is personnel, forged, I would say, even within a good, strong social context, even the understanding of within which you operated is really coming strongly through. And we're nearing the last 15 minutes, basically, of our conversation, and we've got still much more to say, but also two tracks to introduce. Which somehow will tell us a bit more about you. So can you tell us something about the second track we will be listening to?
It's again a very touching piece that I just love. It's by a Maltese, Charles Camilleri, and it's actually called Mediterranean Dances. And it's a bit special for me because it conjures up this idea of a union of cultures.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So although it's called Mediterranean Dances, it once you hear it, it takes me beyond the horizons of the Mediterranean. So again, this kind of inside out, you know, this idea of the sea flowing. And, you know, every time I land in Malta or in a Mediterranean country, I always have this piece in my mind. It kind of plays in my head. It's the vitality of the Mediterranean, you know, this idea that you've got a base that is so vivid and rich and enriching of other possibilities. So, yes, I would like to share it with your audience.
Mm-hmm. Beautiful soundtrack then to what we're saying. Let's listen to it. We're back after that beautiful piece by Charles Camilleri. I'm grateful to Michel Pace for sharing that with us. It's one of those kinds of pieces of music that one maybe doesn't even listen to often enough, but somehow is evocative of what, Michel, you are saying, and somehow brings us to the last part of our interview today, where you've already taken us through many steps, many formative steps, on a personal level, on a professional level, but you really, in a way, you could say you're only just at the beginning of your story, because once you were at Portsmouth University studying within that milieu, which you really described very, very dynamically, very, very effective environment, that's when you started then sort of in another phase of delving deeper, of engaging hands-on with many European and Mediterranean realities. Can you tell us somehow what came your way next? Because you really sort of plunged in now.
Well, while I was studying my PhD, I had this possibility to actually be based in Oslo at the Norwegian Institute of International Affairs for 1 year as a PhD invitee. And there I met Ivar Neumann, who is an amazing human being, but also intellectually extremely bright human being. And through, you know, various conversations with him, he encouraged me to develop, you know, my PhD and was very supportive. And through him, actually, I got to know Michael J. Shapiro, who's based at the University of Hawaii. And Michael's work very much combines the arts and politics. So he uses film to, you know, think about the world we live in. And I love that. I fell in love with his work. And it kind of set in my head, you know, the importance of never thinking or looking globally from one theoretical or conceptual lens or discipline. So since then, my work tries to do this. It tries to be both interdisciplinary, but also, you know, using alternative epistemology. So just to mention a few examples, in my work on migration studies, you know, I was deeply embedded with young Syrians who had arrived in Denmark in 2015. And yet, you know, by being close to them, and this touches also on my work on emotions and international relations, I realized that one of the things they really wanted was actually to get to know young Danes. And it's, you know, it's human nature, right? When you are in a new country and you're young, what you want to do is to learn about the country through people your own age. So again, I was very lucky. I was working with Roskilde Municipality, and some of the key people there got me in touch with two dance choreographers, and we had a chat, and we thought, what would be more nice than just setting up a dance workshop for refugees and young Danes, and culminating this in the what is called here the Lees Festival in Roskilde, the lights show in October when the days are getting dark and there's a festival of lights. So we worked for a whole week, two amazing choreographers, the municipality to make sure that there was a child psychologist, a social worker to take care of anything that might come up while we did this. And the main message was that we don't really need a language to express how we feel and to get to know others, but our bodies can talk very much. So these young people worked very closely together, initially very, you know, very shy, but suddenly, you know, they started to forge relations, which went beyond the dance workshop, and it culminated in one of the most beautiful workshops I have ever seen. It was in an old church, which is like an old cave, and it was open to the general public. And it was very important at a time when narratives about refugees were already starting to be extremely negative in Denmark. So that's kind of one aspect where I combine disciplines. And then the other work I've been doing is on Gaza, which I'm very passionate about. And recently, me and a colleague of mine, Haim Yacobi from UCL, we were funded by the Wellcome Trust to work on a project on health, power and violence. And again, we managed to support a local researcher who conducted interviews with artists in Gaza to look at alternative narratives of how, you know, the situation of the siege is impacting on artists in Gaza. And we prepared a documentary, a short video, which again is open for the general public. So my work tries to both engage intellectually with the academic community, but I think there's a very strong element of having a connection with society and the general public. I think one of the things that Brexit taught me is that we cannot continue to live in our silos as academics. It's very damaging. We need to reach out and make sure that the general public understands what's going on politically so that we avoid potentially dominant harming narratives that, as we have seen through populist discourses, can damage us all, right? So,
And one way, Michelle, that you do this regularly is through the creative form. So you look very much in an interdisciplinary way, not at the arts, at the creative part of human beings and society as something to be sort of focused on itself, but actually very widespread within the rest of society, where we're all, from childhood upwards, able to be creative, to communicate, to work together, and through that, find new ways of, as you very rightly put it, narrate our own stories and also allow others to narrate their own.
Yes, I think a key running theme in my work has been, you know, giving voice to those who are not necessarily having a voice. So giving a voice to the voiceless, but also giving a voice to the marginalized and putting them at the front. So I'm kind of, you know, as I grow older, I am finding myself more as a facilitator, you know, facilitating the work of others, facilitating the lives of others. And if this can bring, you know, a small measure of more justice or more equality, then that is where I'm always kind of led through my research grant applications, through my teaching, and also, you know, what I do in terms of my social work as well and my activist work.
That's right. Michelle, we're nearing the last few minutes, and we've got one more track I'd like to listen to, and I'd like you to help me introduce, because that will sort of then lead us to a few concluding thoughts about this trajectory, a bit like a shooting star, really, because it went by very fast, but at least we got a few ideas also of what sort of makes an academic like yourself pursue certain paths, not only intellectual but even physically and in relation to others. And then the last part, when we come back after this track, also maybe try to foresee a little bit what else is going down this route. But let's listen to this third track after you tell us a little bit more about it.
So it's one of the most probably personal pieces that I'm sharing with you and your audience. It's Andrea Bocelli's Ave Maria. And it's really a track that I have carried since my mother passed away when I was only 13 years of age. And as I mentioned, because my mother actually embedded in me from a very young age the joy of reading and learning, but also, you know, this openness about different cultures, I kind of owe it to her what I have today in terms of where I am and the experiences that I've been very lucky to be exposed to and offered. And I think one message that I would pass, especially through to students, is that out of pain grows a rose. So, you know, emotions can be extremely powerful, but also very beautiful. So, you know, every life experience is an experience that can either, you know, throw us in the corners of the dark or else can open up a lot of borders and openings. So I would encourage all students, no matter what they go through, to open up, you know, to the world, because the world is beautiful. As long as we can cherish that every experience is a good experience, in the sense that even pain can give us something very powerful in our lives.
Can also be nurturing. Let's listen to Andrea Bocelli.
Ave Maria, piena di grazia, il Signore con te. Benedetto il frutto
were back after listening to parts of Andrea Bocelli's rendition of Ave Maria, chosen as a final track by Michelle Pace, my guest today on Min Campus Alihor. Michelle, we're in the last 5 minutes or so. And just before we ended and listened to that very personal, but at the same time universal track by Andrea Bocelli, you once again touched upon this importance of not dealing with topics, with themes in very abstract general terms. And even when we're talking about, say, international relations, it's really easy to think about sort of theories and blocks of ideas and theories, but actually sort of hone in to the personal narratives, which when explored together, say, for example, through creative means, as you have been doing in very practical ways, comes up with larger, stronger sharing of experience and narratives, which can be very powerful. So somehow you are very much in tune with both the personal perspective, the personal story, which very much stems from trauma many times. You've mentioned Syria, you've mentioned Palestine, many other examples, but linking that to sort of a way forward, to something which can guide forward. Can you tell us something in the last few minutes about sort of where possibly this way forward also lies in terms of your research, in terms of your work, maybe even what you see coming up from colleagues and students you work with?
So one of the things that I'm actually working on now, which I hope will be a monograph actually, is actually on resilience and resistance. And again, these are core themes that run through my work. So whether we look at the case of Palestine or the case of, you know, people on the move, in spite of all the tragedy, trauma, and harshness that Palestinians and people on the move face, I see, you know, that there is so much power in the way they resist, you know, bordering practices, for example, or settler colonialism, but also, you know, a sense of resilience, and that is usually in the form of you know, expressions that are creative, but also a strong feature of my work has been looking into community work. Mm-hmm. Where, for instance, if we think about refugees in host societies, in spite of very draconian laws and policies that clearly tell them they are not welcome, you know, they create refugee host communities within host communities. So refugees helping refugees. Mm-hmm. And this to me is extremely powerful. So how, you know, trauma and pain can actually lead you to actually give more to others. So I would like to, you know, to see more of this in our global community. I think the world would be a much better place if we shed, you know, the pressure on individualism and thinking about only the individual and thinking more about the community. And this doesn't have to be a community out there beyond. It can be starting from where we are located geographically, but also, of course, to help others. And of course, within the whole conception of the UN's, you know, SDGs and what we are experiencing now even more forcefully about climate change. Mm-hmm. You know, the message is very clear, right? We are all in this together. And unless, and of course the pandemic is showing us this as well, that unless we all have access to our basic needs and necessities, but also to opportunities and possibilities, you know, no human being is an island. Mm-hmm. So although some individuals may believe that they are going very far, at the end of the day, it will hit back that we cannot be on our own. We have to be together in this, and then we can.
We seem to be experiencing it. I actually remove the word "seem." We are experiencing it already with, as you said, a number of situations where people might imagine that they are safe. Recently, I came across the term future-proofing, which I'm still trying to figure out because I really can't understand what it means. But on the other hand, what you're saying is communities, north, south, globally speaking, are very much interrelated one to the other, both within the field of academia and as well as within the field of community and practical work. So, Michelle, I think we're nearing the final moments of our exchange. But I thank you very much for condensing really many of your perspectives. We didn't touch a number of fields, but actually those we did, we delved into quite a bit. So thank you very much for your experiences, but also for the anecdotes, the personal stories, and the musical tracks, which in a program like this sort of add a dimension and add to the exchange and the experience that one has together.
Thanks to you, Carsten, and thanks for this opportunity. It's a pleasure.
You're welcome, and speak again soon, hopefully. Ninsab perswas illi dik l-intervista ma' Michel Faċe mill-Roskilde, l-Università Danimarka, laqtitkom kif laqtit lili bl-intensità tagħha u bil-firxa kbira ta' narrativi illi rnexxinna nirrakkontaw anke bl-għażla ta' mużika tagħha. U għalhekk nirringrazzjakom tal-li kontu miegħi u nistedinkom terġa' tinaqdu miegħi għal-programm ieħor minn Campus Elevar il-ġimgħa.